I mean, here's a guy that criticizes everybody, whoever they take. He's got the answers to who you should take and who you shouldn't take. And all of a sudden, he's an expert. He's in our papers 2 days ago telling us who we have to take.
Welcome back to the First Team. I'm Joe DeLeon. With me, NFL draft analyst, my good friend Ryan Roberts. It was a long night. It was a long night on the first night of the NFL draft. And I don't know if necessarily the first round was unexpected. A lot of the picks that we got made a lot of sense. There were a couple that were not head-scratching because of the fit, just because of the timing. And the guys that are still left on the board, which we're not going to spend time talking about this part because it's just by the time you might even listen to this draft pod, these guys might end up getting selected. But Cooper DeJean, Jerjon Newton, those guys still being on the board doesn't surprise me as well. Ryan, this draft, it's almost as if somebody predicted that there weren't going to be that many trades. This draft feels a little vanilla, you know? It feels like that there wasn't really the same level of intensity that was brought up that could have happened in the pre-draft process.
I think that for me, everyone hyper-focused on the 3 to 4 picks where you're just kind of like, those are fundamentally bad picks for whatever reason it is. Whether it's value, whether it's a team valuing a position over another, whether it's a team that just kind of overdrafts a player, like all those different types of things is way that we can portray or that we can conclude for a player to be a bad selection or for it to be a bad pick. But other than that, we had a couple like head scratching ones. I mean, like Brock Bowers picked to the Las Vegas Raiders at 13. That's not technically a bad pick. I mean, that
just doesn't make any sense.
It's just weird, right? Sense. It's just weird is the point. And I mean, like Ricky Pearsall to the San Francisco 49ers. Is Ricky Pearsall a bad player?
No. Weird can pick.
Can he help San Francisco? Yes. But is it a pick that made sense at that point in the draft? Like, no, man, it was weird. It was just weird, especially with some of the wide receivers that were on the board. So there was a little bit of weird. There was a couple bad picks mixed in, obviously. But for the most part, the positions that teams targeted made sense. And our only back and forth would be, I would have probably valued this player over the player that was selected. But like,
yeah,
that's just a different perspective on a player and valuing slightly. I mean, like there really wasn't too much egregiousness last night. It was more a little bit of weird mixed in with a couple bad. And that's where our focus always goes to. But we do this every single year, man. Every single year, there's a couple head scratchers. There's a couple picks.
No, stupid. Come on. I feel like last year when we did our recap and then the past couple recaps that we've done, we've sat down and we've been saying, yeah, this one really didn't make a lot of sense. Like, there was no, like the Seahawks didn't pull their typical bit where they took a second round player, and which they kind of did, but they took a guy that a lot of people were expecting to go in the teens. And to your point, where there might have been some prospects that we didn't value that high that ended up going in the first round, they were still being talked about as first round picks throughout the process, which doesn't make it unexpected. I'm talking about Chop Robinson. We didn't like Chop Robinson. He still goes in the first round. We didn't really love Byron Murphy as a first rounder. And we thought he would be a great day two pick. He goes at pick 16. And Ricky Pearsall was the other one that you mentioned. There's just a couple of them that I can't necessarily knock, but just ended up getting drafted higher.
You know what's funny is that I understood the Seattle Byron Murphy thing, right? Like in a vacuum, do I think Byron Murphy should have been the number 16 pick in the draft and a top 20 pick? No, I do not believe that at
all. Should have been Jared Verse. That should have been the pick.
But I still, or it should have been Jerzon Newton if you were comfortable with the off the field stuff. And again, off the field, nothing malicious, nothing criminal, just personality stuff, right? That's all it is. But I still understood the pick though, right? Like you could still explain it to me. I might not agree with the player in that spot, but I still understood it. I felt like for the longest time, Seattle would just pick a player that was just so out of left field. Like Byron Murphy wasn't out of left field. We knew he was going to get drafted pretty high. We knew it was going to happen. We thought this wasn't a Bruce Irvin situation, right? This wasn't a Jordan Brooks situation where you're just like, what, dude? All of a sudden,
I miss those days. Because part of the I don't mean to cut you off. The part of the difference is now though is that they're picking at 16. They used to pick at like 22 or 23. So it enabled them to do that weird crap because you could tell that their draft board kind of fell apart and they were just sitting there scratching their head like, well, this guy's our next graded guy, but we wouldn't take him until the second round. So we're just going to do it anyways, which is not a good draft strategy.
So who's the new Seattle Seahawks, Joe? Because they've become regular recently. Like, they drafted Charles Cross. That one made a lot of sense. They drafted Byron Murphy. That one made more sense. They drafted Devin Witherspoon last year. That one makes more sense, right? Like, it's starting to make more sense in Seattle. Who's the new Seattle Seahawks, man? Is there a team that just kind of throws out weird stuff all the time? I feel like it happens.
So this isn't a Seahawks pod. I want to talk about a couple of the moves that – or not moves, but picks rather that we're sitting here going, oh my God, how did this happen? This is an unbelievable pick.
And what a great segue by me. Absolute great segue. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, you understand that segues are immediately ruined when you point out the quality of the segue. My favorite pick and the one that I'm like, oh my God, how did this happen? This is an amazing steal. And I know you agree with me, was Nate Wiggins, pick 30. Baltimore Ravens. I swear to God, I did a reaction video and I talked about this with the same energy. I swear to God, Ryan, every single year we forget where the Ravens are picking. We don't even talk about them. And even in the mock drafts, we don't even really give them that good of players in the mock drafts. And then they're just sitting there waiting. No trade up, no movement, nothing. And one of the best, most talented players in the class falls right into their lap that fits perfectly with their needs and fits perfectly with the way that the roster is already constructed. The best defense in the NFL just added a guy who runs a 4.29 at 6'2".
4.28.
That guy is going to be a
4.28.
Sorry, 4.28. That guy is going to be, Nate Wiggins is going to be a goddamn Pro Bowler. And even if he's not like a perfect immediate run into the NFL and play super cleanly, just by the pure fact of the team that he's on, playing amongst the talented players that he will be playing with, shows me and makes me feel confident that his progression is going to be great.
Does it ever piss you off every single time the Ravens do this? Because
I love good football. Like, I love good football.
I love good football too. And I remember, Joe, honestly, one of the reasons I went into evaluation and I became so fascinated with it at his younger age was Ozzie Newsome. Because Ozzie Newsome was the general manager that same point, right? He would just find value everywhere. He would let Ray Lewis fall to him in the 20s of the draft, right? And he would find so many great football players. And you're just like, how do the Baltimore Ravens keep doing this and just keep letting value fall to them? And then Ozzie Newsome's out, Eric DaCosta comes in, and what do they keep doing? The same exact thing, right? Lamar Jackson falls to 32. Kyle Hamilton, 14. Nate Wiggins,
Tyler Linderbaum.
Tyler Linderbaum, like, they just keep letting good players fall to them and they keep not overthinking it. And we wonder why the Baltimore Ravens are always in the playoffs every single year and they always have a chance to be a contender in the end, despite having multiple eras of general managers. It's because they believe in the same thing. Eric DaCosta lets good players fall to them, man. And Nate Wiggins is a perfect example. Like, I understand the hesitation about Nate Wiggins, sort of. He's a lighter framed guy. He needs to play strength. He's not great in the run game. But if we're talking about just coverage upside, nobody has more coverage upside, in my opinion, than Nate Wiggins in this class. The athleticism, the short area quickness, the ability to turn and run. This kid is exceptional, and he's going to be a perfect Baltimore Raven. And the Baltimore Ravens have had good cornerback play as long as I can remember. You can think back to Chris Kallister and Dwayne Starks. You can think to more recently with Jimmy Smith and Marcus Peters for a year before he fell off, and Marlon Humphrey. And they just always have good corners, it seems. And Nate Wiggins is the next one. Like, I agree. He could be a Pro Bowler in 2 to 3 years. Like, he has that type of upside to him.
What was another move that you liked?
I mean, I think we both like Demaryius Mims at 18, right, to the Cincinnati Bengals. I feel like we have been just urging the Bengals for the last couple of years, like, prioritize offensive line, prioritize offensive line. And they have in certain spots, right? But then in other spots, it's just like, you mess that one up. What was the big tackle? Jackson Carman from Clemson.
Yeah, it took him to the beginning of the second round a couple of years ago.
Second round pick, awful pick. I think that you took the highest upside offensive tackle in this class that, yes, needs seasoning, but just needs experience. But man, you have the potential to get incredible value at 18. You got a 6'7" plus, 340-pound behemoth who has probably the best core strength I've ever seen in offensive tackle, who has quick feet, who has played only right tackle for Georgia, but also could play left tackle, is just functionally, athletically. You got an absolute studded offensive tackle here at pick 18, man. When, again, like I'm looking at like a few picks later, I think it was like the 26th pick, I think, and they took Tyler Guyton. Yeah. It's like you had to reach for Tyler Guyton because the Bengals were smart enough to take a really talented, good football player at 18 and just let them fall to him. So I love the Amarius Mims pick. I think he's going to be a starting right tackle for them pretty early on in his career, and he could be a future left tackle. He has that type of athleticism to him.
BetOnline remains your top spot for all of your live betting action and contests. NFL, college football, UFC, NHL are all in full swing. BetOnline is your number one source for wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions with both desktop and mobile access at any time. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, for 50% off your first deposit. That is a 50% welcome bonus. Bet online, where the game starts. I tweeted out the Amarius Mims pick, and I reshared my little highlight clip that I had posted a while back. Yep. Got a lot of really positive interaction. It seems like the Bengals fans are excited. For some reason, there's this demo of Bengals fans that don't like it that are in the comments of this post, and I'm really confused. Weird. Yeah, y'all got to chill. That he was the best tackle on the board. He's got the highest ceiling. I understand the concern of him not having a ton of availability over the past couple of years, but if he's healthy, sure, and you get him on the field, he does need a little toughening up to do. Nick Saban pointed it out. Nick Saban brought it up on the broadcast of, you know, this guy came out in the SEC championship game, and you know, maybe he's not really ready to take on this full-time physical beatdown that he's going to take as a starter. But I'm not worried about that. He's a young football player. He is built with a ridiculous frame. I think to the benefit of him being a younger guy and him playing those games, you don't have to feel restricted in where you put him. He is the type of guy where you have both of the Browns. You have Orlando Brown and you have Trent Brown, who are probably going to be your tackles this year. You theoretically, you could put Amarius Mims at guard if you feel a little uneasy on if he's ready to go out to tackle. Because I don't want to put Orlando Brown or Trent Brown at guard. That wouldn't make any sense to me.
Trent Brown would never do it. Oh, actually, no, not Trent Brown. Orlando Brown.
Orlando Brown would never do it. And Trent Brown is too top heavy to play guard and too just not enormous
enough.
So you put him at guard, and then Trent Brown is probably not on much of a long-term deal. You bump Mims out to tackle. And if Mims is so ready, you trade Trent Brown. I think that most teams are going to be hurting for a good right tackle.
Or I don't think the contract for Trent Brown's very crazy either, right? So, I mean, even if Trent Brown just becomes a swing tackle, it's like, cool, man. That's where you create depth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because let's be honest, injuries happen, right? And with Amarius Mims' case, he has had some durability concerns. So there's no guarantee that he's going to play 17 games in 2024, even if he is a full-time starter for you. So I think that having that type of a tackle rotation potentially is pretty big time for them. Can I give you two guys in one conversation here real quick, Joe?
Okay.
I thought these were two of the biggest values in this class. I live right outside of Philadelphia. We talk about that all the time. Okay. So I'm going to throw in an Eagles pick and then my fandom for a second. My fandom is Jared Verse at 19 to the LA Rams. I thought was a stellar selection. Okay. For a couple reasons, a couple quick ones. One, Rams need more pass rush help to go with Byron Young, who came out of Tennessee last year in last year's draft. They also have Kobe Turner, that was a former Richmond and ended up obviously at Wake Forest his final season. But they need more pass rush help. And I like that they went edge rather than going for Jerzon or an interior defensive lineman, because I think that you're never going to replace Aaron Donald one for one, but you can improve another position. And they improved the opposite defensive end outside of Young. So I think that he is an immediate upgrade. And then I go to the Philadelphia Eagles at 22. The Philadelphia Eagles have not drafted a cornerback since 2002, and it was Lito Shepard. So in 22 years, no first-round corners. And they went out of their comfort zone here. They drafted Quinyon Mitchell with the 22nd overall pick, who I believe gives the Eagles their most talented cornerback they've had in quite some time. I mean, this young man, 6 foot plus, 195 pounds, 31 plus inch arms, 4.33 in the 40, went to the Senior Bowl, dominated, went on the combine, tested like an elite athlete, showcased himself in the biggest spots in this draft process. And by the way, James Bradbury was awful in 2023, and you could not just run it back with James Bradbury on the other side of Darius Slay. You needed to get younger, more talented at the cornerback spot. And I think that they were a team also that lets a good football player fall to them at 22, because there was a possibility Quinyon could have went number 8 to Atlanta, could definitely went in the teens somewhere to like the Las Vegas Raiders.
Should have gone 8 to Atlanta.
Or, yeah, Las Vegas Raiders could have taken him at 13. Denver Broncos could have taken him at 12. Like, there was a few teams that could have taken Quinyon pretty early. They get a tremendous value at 22. I hate the Philadelphia Eagles, but Quinyon Mitchell at 22 is a heck of a value.
Tell us how you really feel. I love Quinyon with the Eagles because their secondary definitely needed to improve. And again, they're one of those teams when they draft, they've had the benefit of having a lot of draft picks. And then this year they don't have as, you know, they just have the singular pick in the end of the first round, and they're able to get the first corner off the board, which is fantastic for them. Any team that was picking a corner really benefited because they didn't have to really move up. Like, the Lions are a good example, getting Terry and Arnold. They didn't really have to move up. Yeah. So I really like the pick. I really like Jared Verse as well. There's a lot of picks that we could sit here and really applaud. There's a ton that I like. This is one of the very few times, I think, in a first round where I really liked a lot of these picks. And it was a talented first round compared to most drafts, which makes a lot of sense. Next year, we're probably going to be criticizing a lot of picks because next year's class is not as good. To talk about some of the picks that were head scratchers or decisions that were head scratchers, I think there's two that come into mind the most. One first being Michael Penix with the Falcons. I don't hate Michael Penix being an Atlanta Falcon, and this is going to be the biggest talking point for everybody. If they traded back in to say pick 25 and they took him, I would feel completely fine with that. And honestly, that was like an expectation, not for the Falcons, just for somebody to do that for Michael Penix. It seems like they got talked into doing it because they were worried that somebody else was going to take him. It sounds like there was a fear that the Raiders were going to take him. They didn't want to miss out on figuring things out. This just felt like a really flustered, rushed decision. And you can kind of see from the interaction between Blank and Fontenot, that video that has been resurfaced and resurfaced over the course of the night of them interacting, where it seems like he's trying to explain a very haphazard decision-making process. I think that Michael Penix gets the best situation to sit and wait potentially, but it's just really, really dumb for him to be 27, 28 by the time that Kirk Cousins' contract is done and that he's out the door. And not only the fact, you're pissing him off. Apparently he was caught off guard. You didn't call him and tell him until right before you made the pick. This should have been an edge rusher. This should have been a corner. This should have been a receiver. They're trying to win the conference now. This is the best position that they've been in 5 years to win the NFC South. And I don't know if the rest of their picks are going to be good enough. I'm telling you right now, this could be the pick that gets Fontenot fired.
I mean, it could, right? If we look back on it, and it's obviously not a great start to the Raheem Morris era in Atlanta. Like, it's a very funky one. I would say quite simply like this, Joe. I hate the process. People are going to talk themselves into it, and I get it, right? Functionally, can Michael Penix be a good quarterback in Atlanta? I believe he can be. I believe he can be. But the process is very flawed and frankly stupid. It really is. Because one, you just gave Kirk Cousins a 4-year, $180 million deal. Now, I know apparently that there's a out after year two. But so let me ask what the ideal scenario is then. Is that Kirk Cousins plays well for 2 years, but he's 38 at that point. So you want to go to the new era. You get out of his contract, and then you come to Michael Penix, who is unproven. And at that point, we'll be 26 years old. That process stinks to me. And also, I think it's super flawed because not only just that transitional stuff, What? Why are you shaking your head?
I just like the more that you talk about it, it's just so stupid.
Well, Joe, if this was Drake, it, though.
I know. Sorry, but just to interject really quickly, if this was fine. Drake May, it would have made even more sense because he's a young kid.
Because he's 21.
This is one of the oldest quarterback prospects.
You know that we talked about quarterback rankings, and you know that I actually had Michael Penix over J.J. McCarthy, right? But I think J.J. would have made more sense for this situation because he's younger.
Yes.
It would have made more sense. The other side is you alienated the quarterback. You already talked about that. You alienated your short-term future of quarterback. And also, are we going to act like Atlanta is this great roster that is afforded to do this? Some people are going to compare this to Jordan Love and the Green Bay Packers a couple years ago. One, that was the number 26 overall pick. And all due respect, Green Bay Packers, historically, they get a little bit more leeway to make that decision. They get a lot more leeway because they are consistently a good product and they've done that before. Literally, I know that they traded for Brett Favre, but literally they have done that before where they get a quarterback. They had Don Majkowski at the time. They got Brett Favre in a trade with Atlanta. Then they get Aaron Rodgers in the late first round to sit behind Brett Favre, and they're patient with him. This is not the same situation. The Packers have proven that they are able to do this. Atlanta just used the number 8 overall pick for a backup quarterback. That happens when you have no edge rushers. You have A.J. Terrell, who's been on the downtrot and is probably out after this year, and have no other corner outside of maybe Clark Phillips that could be a long-term answer. You are not a roster that has the luxury of taking a backup quarterback that's going to sit for 2 years behind Kirk Cousins at number 8 overall.
Yeah.
You are not in the luxury of that, and they chose that they were. I think it is one of the weirdest, most flawed, idiotic processes that I've ever seen. It doesn't make sense. Could it end up working out? Sure, there's some way that this could work out. But even if it does work out, it is an outlier situation. This is not a process that is sustainable or makes any logistical sense. It doesn't make any sense. It's nonsensical. It is a weird, weird process.
So a lot of the other picks, as I mentioned at the beginning, there's a lot of guys who went earlier than we would have been comfortable with. So I don't want to waste or necessarily talk about those picks. Again, I mentioned Chop Robinson. Byron Murphy goes earlier than we thought, but it still makes sense for Seattle, so it's not a bad pick. I think that the only other real head scratcher for me is what the Bills did. The Bills came into the first round, traded back twice, and they needed a receiver. Not only do they need a receiver, but they need an impactful receiver. They traded out multiple times and left the first round. I think that they're maybe hoping that they could take Keon Coleman at 33. I just don't love it, man. Their receiver room stinks. Their receiver room is so freaking bad right now. I don't know what the expectation should be for the Bills. They might be a mess offensively next year.
Well, let me ask you a question though, Joe. Let's say, so if they would have stayed at 28 though, because I understand what you're saying, but so if they stay at 28 and take Xavier Worthy, or if they take Keon Coleman at 33, is that a downgrade? I mean, I don't think that's a downgrade necessarily, though. And you recoup some draft picks.
But it's not about
you
that.
You wanted them to be aggressive, is what you're saying?
I wanted them to trade up. They let Brian Thomas Jr. come off the board at 23. It doesn't look like there was another receiver before that. They should have come into the draft being aggressive. They are a team right now that is trying to win. I talk about this a lot. There's a lot of different philosophies with trying to build a team through the draft. Sometimes you're at the luxury of being able to trade back because you've got a good roster and you're just trying to add pieces. You're just trying to look for starters. But they have a good roster and a massive gaping hole at receiver. They should have tried to trade up, and maybe it was too hard for them to go up and get Roma Dunze at 9 or somewhere in that range. Maybe they tried to make those phone calls, but at the very least, you could have traded up to 22 and taken Brian Thomas Jr.
It's a fair strategy because also the Eagles have been a historical team that is okay with trading either up or back. So I'm sure that they would have been a team that would have been interested in that. If you're going to stick at 28 and take a receiver, I'm okay with them trading back twice and still being at 33. Because at the end of the day, I still think you're going to get a potentially impactful wide receiver at 33. And I don't think that it's a, I don't think 20, because again, if you're talking about trading up versus settling back and then the gap between receivers that you're potentially going to get at 33 compared to 23 or 22, that's a unique conversation. I completely understand that vantage point. But if it's a simple conversation of like, hey, you should have taken a guy at 28 compared to 33, I don't think there's going to be much separation in that conversation. So that's, yeah. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I mean, it all depends who they take at 33. If they come out and they draft Keon Coleman or Ladd McConkey, I'm going to be like, okay, cool. You're okay. Because you got some extra draft capital on top of that. You can probably double the wide receiver at some point in this class because it's a very deep class, to say the least. Can I throw one more at you?
Yep. Yep.
I hate the Jordan Morgan pick for Green Bay at 25. Hate it, Joe.
Hate
Joe,
Morgan.
Not even
you
for the player.
Like, I think this pick's fine, man. I think that this is like a B minus pick. It gets the job done. It's not bad.
At what position does it get the job done?
Guard. He's a guard. He's not playing tackle. They're not putting him at left tackle.
Well, apparently they are putting him at left tackle. For one, that's the plan. For two, Rasheed Walker's
come out and say that.
I think they did. Yeah. Someone sent me a video of it. I haven't listened to it yet, but I believe they did. If I'm saying that incorrectly and that is not what they actually said, I apologize. But it seems from the surface level that they are planning to play tackle, Joe. Okay. And here's my viewpoint on this is why I hate this pick so much. Yes, I do not think Jordan Morgan's a top 25 player in this class. I don't think that he's a reach of 25. Let's separate that for a second, though. Why I really dislike this, though, is that you're starting Rasheed Walker at left tackle going into 2024. That is your left tackle. So if you drafted this kid to play left tackle, it's a fine objective, but I think it's going to be a failed one. Because if he is successful, a successful tackle at the NFL level, he is a historical outlier, man. Historical. I don't think you could bet on that, especially on the first round. I believe that he's going to end up playing interior offensive line on the next level. And my big pushback would be, I just think flat out, there were better interior offensive linemen on the board at 25 than Jordan Morgan. You disagree with that? You think so?
Well, yeah, they could have gone like Jackson Powers Johnson or Zach Fritt.
I like Graham Barton better than him. I like Graham Barton better than him too.
I don't. I think that, to your point, if he plays tackle, that would be a complete misuse of him. And I think that they're going to find out really quickly in training camp he's not a tackle. He can't move quickly enough to play tackle. But his power profile and his mobility is great for guard. I think he's going to be a really good guard. That was why I've always been pretty high and like Jordan Morgan.
But they don't need guards, though. They don't need guards. Look at their starting guards right now.
They need linemen. They need line. No, you want Sean Ryan to start a guard. That's why you're saying that.
Sean Ryan is going to start a guard, buddy, because this kid's playing left tackle for them in 2024. Just wait on it.
At Joe DeLeon at Rising Draft. I'm already still tired from last night. We're going to recap immediately after the second and third round. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Subscribe so you don't miss out, and then drop a comment below. Let us know what you think. We'll talk to you later.